Hi, everyone. I'm Mark Wasiliu. I'm the MLA for Fort Garry, and welcome to our seventh episode on the Ledge podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to all things provincial politics. This week on the pod, we'll be talking about the cost of living and affordability politics in Manitoba and what the Canoe government is and isn't doing to help working families. There's been another big, splashy, Wabtcanoe-broken election promise this week, and once again, it's about the environment. There's been some new developments on the Canoe government's signature initiative on geothermal home conversions, and we'll get into the politics of that. But first, we're talking media and provincial politics. The Canoe government just cut a deal with the Winnipeg Free Press, and we have a lot to say about journalist integrity and what this says about both the Canoe government and the ethics of the Winnipeg Free Press. So, lots to cover. Let's get into it. There's been some developments recently with the policy surrounding media and provincial politics that needs to have some comment. At one time, newspapers like the Winnipeg Free Press acted as monopolies and made huge profits in advertising. Those days are long gone. Advertisers have left papers in droves, and people aren't getting their news anymore from newspapers or television, and readership and viewers are in rapid decline. Now, the Winnipeg Free Press is in trouble, as are all traditional media, including radio stations and TV news. Now, since I was elected in 2019, I've seen a sharp drop in the amount of reporters and the amount of news coverage that's generated to cover provincial politics. And I've been told by members of the legislature who have been there for 20 plus years, that a generation ago, the media gallery would be packed and even small communities would have news outlets that would send reporters to the Ledge. Now, those days are long gone. There are fewer reporters and fewer stories on provincial politics, and that means fewer people are actually following provincial politics. And for a democracy, that's not good. If people don't know what's going on, they become detached from their politics and they have even less reasons to vote. And already we have 45% of our population who do not vote in a provincial election, and sadly, that number is only going to grow. It also means that provincial governments do what they like, and no one actually holds them accountable. There's just simply no media coverage. And that's, of course, bad for all of us. And to have a functioning democracy, we need a functioning media landscape. Now, with all this, we're also seeing the rise of misinformation. And we're seeing that Main Street journalists are actually at the front lines of properly informing the public. I know people are always down on journalists, but they have ethical standards, they have editors, and they work very hard to try to get the facts right. I mean, they're not always successful, but they do the best that they can, and they basically honor us with a very crucial public service. But with the rise of social media and most people getting their news now from social media as opposed to traditional news outlets, we're also seeing the rise of disinformation. And that, of course, hurts us all because fake news becomes cancerous to a democracy. So to that end, the Canoe government recently announced a new initiative, and I'm quoting them here, that they're going to partner with the Winnipeg Free Press. Now, the Winnipeg Free Press is a for-profit private company whose job is also to hold the government to account, but they're in the business of making money. Now, the Canoe government and the Department of Education is partnering not only with the Winnipeg Free Press, but also the Winnipeg School Division in launching a media literacy platform. Now, this platform will have lessons on journalism, on social media algorithms, and media literacy. But here's the issue. This is a private, for-profit media company that very much has its own sort of worldview that is helping to design the curriculum that your children will have to take about media literacy. And there's some issues there about whether or not they or rightly should be in that position to influence how children think about these things. So despite taxpayer dollars funding these teachers who will be part of the initiative, the Free Press also gets a say in curriculum and will be providing resources on their own website. Here's the second problem. They're going to be putting this website behind a Free Press paywall, meaning that you have to subscribe to the Winnipeg Free Press in order to access these media literacy programs. Now, the Winnipeg Free Press will make money off of this, what is supposed to be educational resources built by and for taxpayer-funded teachers. So this is cross-marketing. You have teachers who will tell their students that they have to go to this site, which will then force their parents to subscribe to the Winnipeg Free Press, whether they want to or not, in order to access school program materials. The Winnipeg Free Press gets new customers. They get to use the public education system to market their private product. And they're going to make money off of Manitobans. And the idea that teachers will be assigning students to read articles written by Winnipeg Free Press journalists and videos made by their content creators off their site. It creates a captive audience. So this is wrong in absolutely so many ways. A private for-profit corporation should have no input into the curriculum of Manitoba students. And we're seeing this like constant creep of privatization with the Canoe government. And we've seen it in healthcare. We've seen it in government services like airplanes, and now we're seeing it in education. Now, the school system is being used to drive customers and new subscribers to the Winnipeg Free Press. And in a tough media landscape, that's not even fair to the other news outlets, including not-for-profits like the CBC, who won't have that advantage. So the Canoe government is picking winners and losers, and they are privileging the Winnipeg Free Press. And the optics of this are bad. The Winnipeg Free Press have been certainly criticized for what people have perceived as uncritical coverage of the Canoe government. They have some columnists that could be described as apologists or even fanboys of the government. And this is not going to help that. This is certainly, the Winnipeg Free Press is going to take a hit on their integrity, and it's going to put them in an awkward situation to criticize a government when they're literally making money off of this government. So it's a deeply troubling move, and one that hasn't received, surprise, surprise, much media commentary about it, and I wonder why. And there really wasn't any discussion, there wasn't any community input, there doesn't appear to be any pre-announcement that this was coming, and didn't allow parents and teachers or the MTS union to weigh in on this. And of course, this has entered the world in a deeply flawed way. So instead of enhancing democracy and the public square in Manitoba, this initiative is going to be a huge step backwards. So let me know what you think. Today, I wanted to focus on affordability, the cost of living. In Manitoba, we've been in a cost of living crisis for a few years now. Prices have skyrocketed and they haven't kept up with wages. And many Manitobans are finding it very hard to live. One of the areas where the Canoe government has made a lot of noise, but hasn't actually made a lot of progress, is affordability. Many of the Canoe policies have actually made life less affordable for Manitoban working families. So what are Manitobans experiencing? Well, the two main drivers of cost of living crisis in Manitoba, number one is housing. We have an affordable housing shortage, and it's not just a homeless crisis. It goes well beyond that. We do not have enough homes to house all the people living unsheltered. We know that. But we also don't have enough starter homes. We have many young families who cannot afford to buy their first homes. The down payments have gotten so huge that it's basically forced them to rent indefinitely, and they can't climb on the property ladder. And Manitoba leads the country in skyrocketing rent. So even if you don't want to buy a house or you can't afford to buy a house, your rent is going up faster than the rest of the country. And that's despite Manitoba being a rent-controlled province. And I'll get into that more. We're also missing affordable and appropriate housing for students, for seniors, and specialty housing for people living with disabilities. And of course, we are missing housing for all of the retiring boomers out there. We need more personal care home space in Manitoba, and we're just not keeping up with the demand. The second area that Manitoba is experiencing a cost of living crisis is the cost of groceries. Manitoba leads the country in skyrocketing grocery store prices. We know food bank usage is up in Manitoba, and that the demographics of who's using the food banks is changing. Now, we're seeing working families go to the food bank more now than they have in recent years, and these are people with children at home. And we know from the research that the food banks are doing that people are buying less food and less nutritious food to save money. And the costs keep going up year over year, and there just is no response from the provincial government. Now, when we talk Manitoba economy, Under Wapkinew, the Manitoba economy has been going in the wrong direction for a while. Deloitte Canada recently released its forecast for the economy for next year and said that Manitoba GDP is going to grow at a meager 0.6% next year when the Canadian average is 1.1%. It's almost half. And when we look at our neighbors, Saskatchewan's going to grow three times as much at 1.8%. Alberta's going to grow twice as much at 1.3%, both above the national average. We're told that Manitoba businesses are simply not investing in the economy anymore and that we have the worst youth unemployment rate in decades. Manitoba has once again the shameful claim of having the title as the child poverty capital of Canada. And this is also hitting the working poor. One out of every four workers in Manitoba earn less than a living wage. That's 170,000 people. And they're overwhelmingly female, overwhelmingly mothers with children under the ages of 18 at home. Many of them are newcomers. So we're talking about a very vulnerable workforce that is not making a living wage. And it's also tied in with child poverty. If we simply took that 170,000 people and paid them a living wage, that would put a massive dent into our child poverty numbers and would pull many, many families out of poverty. But we know that this has not been on the Canoe government's radar. They don't even talk about child poverty. They certainly have no solutions and they have no initiatives to alleviate it. So what has been the Canoe government's response to the affordability crisis? Well, not much. They've refused to bring in a living wage. So those 25%, 170,000 workers are going to continue to be underpaid. And although they work full time or have to have two part-time jobs, it's not enough for them to live in a dignified wage. And of course, that's a huge drag on our economy. These are huge population that doesn't have the money to spend in shops and services in Manitoba. And that makes things harder for the rest of the economy. And of course, there's absolutely no ambition to tackle child poverty, even put in some measures that would help. They have brought in a universal nutrition program in schools, but that's one tiny initiative that certainly is not going to be a silver bullet or a solution. In fact, at the same time the government did that, they froze EIA rates in the last provincial budget, which with inflation means that people who are on EIA are actually seeing cuts to the money that they're getting from the province. So that's making inequality worse. And that's certainly one of the main issues facing Manitobans when we talk about crime and homelessness. And the government certainly has not taken any different position than the previous Palliser government. Both governments are ignoring inequality and any solutions that we could use to address it. So here are some of the government's policies that actually have made things worse. One of the hallmarks of the Canoe government is that it has adopted the fiscal policies of the Palliser government. And that meant they have kept the tax cuts for the rich. And when they've done that, it meant their government has been starved for revenue. They just don't have money for services or to invest in hiring back our civil servants. So healthcare remains underfunded, and we're seeing the effects of that, having some of four of the worst performing ERs in Canada here in Manitoba. We're also seeing education being underfunded. And there are spillover effects. School trustees can't run deficits, and they need to pay to keep the education system running. So when Canoe underfunds the schools, what that means for the school boards is they're now forced to raise education property taxes. And they did that. This last year, we saw increases in the education property tax of between 10 and 25%, depending on the school board that you live under. And if you're a senior, a low-income person who owns their own house, this is hitting you really hard. They also promised that they would keep the PC education property tax rebate, where the province paid 50% of your education property tax bill. Now, despite making that promise during the election, the Canoe government broke it. Now, they said what they're going to do is give you a $1,500 rebate for homes valued under about $290,000. And basically, if your home was under $290,000, you wouldn't pay any education property tax at all. And they argued that people were actually better off under their plan. But here's the problem. The average home price in Winnipeg is well over $400,000. And it's similar in rural Manitoba, which means that most Manitobans aren't going to be better off. And in in fact, are going to end up paying more in education property taxes. So it also didn't take into account that the value of houses, because we have a housing shortage, is rapidly growing. Every 2 years, your house gets reassessed, and it is going to go up in value. And the more expensive your house gets, the more tax you pay. So even though you didn't spend that money buying a more expensive house, your tax bill is going to go up exponentially because of that. And the tax rate doesn't get indexed for this inflation. So that means the $1,500 rebate, they added $100 this year, so it'll be a $1,600 rebate. But every year, that rebate will feel smaller and smaller, and you will pay more and more taxes. Now, at one time, Manitoba paid 80% of the education bill, and property taxes only accounted for about 20% of what it costs to put your kid's school in operation. But because of underfunding, that number has shrunk. And in places like Pembina Trails, which I represent, your property taxes actually pay more for your schools than the province actually contributes. So that means you pay more. It also means that services are cut. If you go into a school today, as opposed to 20 years ago, school boards can't offer you the same quality of education that maybe you received when you went to school. The same options aren't there, and the same staffing levels aren't there, which means larger class sizes, and that will continue to grow. It also means more school fees. You're paying more and more for field trips, for lunch supervision, school supplies, you name it. Fees that you never paid for 20 years ago. And of course, if you are a working family, every one of these hits will hurt, and it will be making life less affordable for you. We're also seeing underfunding of the university. Federal government has cut back on international students, and we relied on international students because we would charge them three times the fees that we would charge Canadian students to make up the shortfall. So now that the international students aren't here to do that, what happens? The provincial government isn't making up for that shortfall, and that means skyrocketing tuition fees. And higher tuition fees is a tax on students. Tuition fees continue to rise year over year, and it makes education harder and a distant dream for many middle-class families. Now, the province said that they would bring in a middle-class tax cut by indexing tax brackets. That was one of the promises during the election. Now, depending on how much you make, you get fit into a tax bracket. And with the cost of living increases with your wages, and a lot of people have gotten raises recently, that can bump you up to a higher tax bracket. And the result is, despite earning more, you actually end up paying more in taxes, and you're actually worse off even though you got a raise. Now, this only really hurts working families. Once you get to the top income bracket, there's no bracket creep, meaning that you're not going to have to pay more due to inflation. But that's not true for low and middle income Manitobans. And unlike most other provinces, Manitoba doesn't really tax our high income earners. We have lower tax rates for our high income earners than places like Ontario, Quebec, and BC. So there's no bracket creep if you're rich, but if you're middle class and you're working poor, there absolutely is. Basically, it's pushing the tax burden onto middle class Manitobans. Wab Canoe promised during the election he was going to eliminate these bracket creeps, and he was going to keep the practice in place and make sure that our tax brackets rise with inflation. He broke his promise, and he stopped indexing these tax brackets, and he raised $80 million by doing that, and that's $80 million out of the pockets of working families. He could have taxed wealthy families, as other provinces do. He chose not to. He had a choice. Who was he going to get this money from? Instead of taxing people who are benefiting from the economy and doing very well and could absorb the tax hikes, he put it on to middle class and working class Manitobans. So another cost that affects families, of course, is the price of gas. Now, Canoe did borrow money to bring in a gas tax holiday, and he did get rid of it. Most of that money went to corporations and businesses and didn't go to Manitobans. And what did go to Manitobans was not significant. But here's a second promise he made that he never talks about because he is most likely breaking it. He promised that he would regulate the gas industry in Manitoba like they do in Quebec and the Maritime provinces. You see, every long weekend, gas prices spike. And we know that it's based on demand pricing, that more people are traveling during long weekends, so gas stations raise up their price and they make a profit. When Canoe was asked about this in the media, he intimated that he felt that there was price gouging going on. Okay. And I think a lot of people certainly would share that view. And his solution was, and this is his promise, he was going to give powers to the Public Utilities Board to prevent these gas spikes and make sure that Manitobans weren't getting gouged at the pumps. 2 years later, nothing. 2 years later, he's taken no action at all. In fact, he had stated that he was going to bring in the gas tax holiday to give himself the time to put in the regulations and the government systems in place in order to regulate gas. And that has not happened, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And this is looking very much like another canoe broken promise that's going to cost you more. Remember surge pricing? That also was a canoe promise. He said he was going to ban it. So what is surge pricing? Well, if you've ever tried to buy a ticket to a popular rock concert, you probably experienced this. If you use a product or service at its peak time or it's growing in popularity, then the cost of that service gets pricier. Now, in the context for Manitoba, we're talking about Manitoba Hydro. Hydro has been talking for years about bringing in surge pricing and basically how it would work. If you're using your dishwasher or you're doing laundry between, you know, 5 and 10 p.m. on a weeknight, the price for your electricity would go up much higher. If you get up at 4 a.m. to do your laundry, you'd actually pay less. And the idea is to encourage people to use their devices in off-peak times. Now, Canoe, in opposition, said this was unfair, especially to working families. Say you work shift work. You can't pick the time that you choose to do things like use your appliances or do laundry. The end result would be that some families would be unfairly forced to do peak hours laundry and dishwashing, and their hydro bills would skyrocket as a result. So he promised during the election to ban this practice. Not only is he not banned it, Manitoba Hydro recently was laying the groundwork to actually bring in surge pricing in Manitoba. We know that it was tried in Ontario and many people were critical of it, said it was a disaster. And Manitoba Hydro has started polling Manitobans to see if they would support it here. Why would you do that if the government had promised to get rid of it? So I think Wab Canoe has some explaining to do about surge pricing. So that brings me now to the next big area where you're getting hit in the pocketbook, and that's, of course, grocery store prices. In response to pressure from the media, the Canoe government wasn't doing anything to bring down grocery store prices. They brought in a piece of legislation recently that would ban large landlords from preventing competition in their strip malls by disallowing rival grocery stores from setting up shop in the same mall. This law has been tried elsewhere, and the results are clear. It absolutely doesn't work. Major grocery store chains have no interest setting up next to one another in the same mall. And if you're a small grocery store and you want to compete with a big one, landlords don't need laws preventing them from simply not renting to you. They don't have to give a reason, or they can make you jump through so many hoops that it would just logically be impossible for you to get into that mall. And they absolutely don't need a law saying they can't do this. They can work around it without anybody being the wiser. The idea behind the law is you create more competition. With more competition, you're hoping for lower prices. That just simply hasn't been the case. This law hasn't worked where it's been tried, and it's more about public relation, and it's certainly designed to fail. The real issue, and the real issue in Manitoba about why you pay so much in grocery store prices, is that we have a handful of very large chains that control access of who can put products in their stores. For those that don't know, when you walk into your grocery store and you look at the different aisles, the companies, the big sort of distribution, wholesaling, food production companies, they pay fees. They pay fees to have the right to put products in the big chain stores. They also have to rent the space on desirable shelves for their products. So what happens from this? Well, large, mostly US-based product companies then have to raise their prices to pay for the rents to put the products in the stores. These things aren't for free. So small companies can't afford to pay the rents in the first place, which means they can't get their products into stores, which means there's less competition and less choice for consumers. And a handful of big food wholesalers who do put limited number of brands in the stores, and they mark up the prices to pay for the rents. Now, we don't have to live like this, and other countries don't. In fact, Ireland, the United Kingdom, and Australia, they have laws in place that actually ban these fees. And with no surprise, their grocery store prices are cheaper than ours in Canada, and they have more choice on their shelves. Now, Manitobans and Canadians know about this. The dairy producers of Canada have been lobbying hard for years to change our laws to ban this practice in Canada. And so far, no action from the Canoe government. There's no solution that would actually lower grocery store prices. Well, the second solution would be to expand co-op grocery stores or community-owned nonprofit grocery stores, especially in marginalized communities or in food deserts. If you're running a grocery store, which is nonprofit, you can take what would be your profit and use it to lower prices on consumers. The third big idea that we could be doing in Manitoba right away to lower your grocery bill is to put a cap on grocery store prices. We already do that in Manitoba with the price of milk. Province of Manitoba sets the price of milk, and it's one of the only products that hasn't been affected by the cost of living crisis and has remained affordable. But there's a catch. It's only for southern Manitoba. These price caps don't exist in northern Manitoba, and northern Manitobans are getting gouged, and it is cheaper to buy a 2 liter of cola in northern Manitoba than it is to get milk to your children. Now, we can expand price caps to other staples that are made in Manitoba. And the real issue here is the Canoe government hasn't shown any interest in providing solutions that we can do this. If we can do it for milk, we can do it for bread, we can do it for a host of other products like eggs and other staples. So ask yourself why that isn't happening when we already do it in Manitoba. Finally, we come to housing. Once again, Manitoba has the fastest growing rents in the country. How does that happen? Don't we have rent control? Well, yes, we do. But Manitoba law has a loophole, and this loophole allows landlords to make cosmetic renovations to buildings and then get approval from the province to jack up rents above the rental cap. So if your rent cap in Manitoba is 2.5-3% a year, people are getting rent increases of 10-30% in a year. And sometimes the same building, that landlord will apply year after year for those type of increases. I recently had a constituent show me their rent increase bill. It was a whopping 163% in 1 year. Shocking number. And they had gone, this landlord had gone through the proper channels, went through the province, and the province approved it. That person is now forced to move out of their house. You've heard the expression rent evictions. Well, that's happening to thousands of Manitobans every year, and rent is becoming unaffordable. And this is all preventable. We do not have to live like this. In fact, in opposition, Canoe was opposed to this, and he promised during the election that he would close the loophole. But once in office, he tabled legislation with only 4 days left in the spring sitting in 2024, and he let the bill that would have closed the loophole die on the order paper. He never allowed it to advance or to become the law. Why did he do that? The following year, he never even reintroduced that piece of legislation, and it's clear by his actions that he intends to break that promise and that he has no interest in closing this loophole. That's very much in the interest of large landlords, but keep in mind, 40% of Manitobans rent. This is a major issue and affects hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Manitobans, and the Canoe government absolutely does not have your back. You've probably heard about Rent Assist program. Well, that's a joint program with the federal government that provides a rent top-up to low-income families to rent in the private market. And you have to apply to the program. But what happens, and this has happened twice recently, more families have applied than there was actually money. And when the money ran out the first time, the Canoe government actually stepped up and added more money to help people on the waiting list. Then it ran out of money again. And this time, the Canoe cut them off. And they wouldn't add any more money to people who would otherwise qualify for rent assist. So what does that mean? That means that families, vulnerable families, are very much at risk of homelessness. So you have this bizarre situation where the government on one hand is trying to end homelessness, and one of the tools that prevents homelessness, they're underfunding and they're not actually paying for all the families that qualify for that program. It's a bizarre situation, and if you apply and you qualify and they simply run out of money, then you're out of luck and you're on your own. And again, the Canoe government does not have your back. Now, I'm talking to housing advocates, and they tell me that there's simply not enough affordable housing in Manitoba, that developers cannot build affordable housing units. They just can't afford to do it. There's not a market solution here, that the only way you're going to get a significant amount of affordable housing in Manitoba is that governments are going to have to build non-market housing. So the Right to Housing Coalition says that Manitoba needs to build 1,000 units every year for the next 10 years to keep up. Wabkinew is not committed to that, and that's not what's happening. In fact, the housing crisis is getting worse each year. City of Winnipeg recently said that in the past 2 years, the city has grown by 45,000 new people. That is a major burst of population in Manitoba, something that we haven't seen in a generation or longer. That's something that calls for a government response, a plan, and you're just not seeing that. The housing crisis is going to get worse in Winnipeg and in Manitoba before it gets better, and it doesn't seem like the government is addressing it. I'll tell you a story about what happened to me on the campaign trail that really illustrated how bad this problem is. Now, my riding of Fort Garry is a riding of renters, about 50% of my constituents rent. And I was knocking on the door, and it was home to a young couple. They expressed their frustration to me. They had been renters for years. They're in their early 30s. They wanted to start a family, but they wanted a home so that they could do it. But they couldn't afford it. Houses have gotten so expensive that even starter homes, the down payments were so large and their salaries didn't keep up. So the price of housing has been skyrocketing year over year, but salaries haven't kept pace, which means that they're getting their income, which isn't enough to put money aside to save so that they can pay for these ever-increasing down payments, which has meant that they feel trapped, that they don't want to rent, but they have no choice. They're going to have to for the foreseeable future. And of course, their rent's going up, which gives them even less disposable income to put money aside to have a down payment. So they feel helpless and they feel doomed to rent. Literally two streets over, I knock on the door, and the person at the door is an 80-year-old widower. And he lives in a beautiful, nice family home. He's been there for 50 years. He's paid it off. His wife has passed, and his children are all adults and living on their own. And he's alone in a large family-sized house. He hasn't been to the second floor of his house in years. It's too much house for him, but it's paid off. And he's retired. He's on a fixed income. And having a house which is paid off is inexpensive for him because he owns it. He wants to leave. He wants to downsize. He wants to live in a smaller place. And he's looked. But now he would have to rent. And the problem is he has trouble finding a good, affordable place to rent as a senior that it would actually be cheaper than staying in his house. He just couldn't do it. So he's now forced to live in a house which is too big for him that he wants to downsize, which is a family house, which that young couple would more than happy to move in and live and start their family. But he feels trapped because there's no alternative for him and that anything he rents is going to be far more expensive than staying in a massive house that's too big for him that he doesn't need anymore. This is the situation in Manitoba, that we have a housing market which is not meeting the needs of families. And it's not addressing that over the course of your lifetime, you're going to need different type of housing at different stages of your life. There's simply no government policies. This is something that's been ignored. And I've talked about this on the pod, and this is also another huge issue in Fort Garry, especially in my Fort Rouge neighborhood in West Fort Garry, is land speculators. We've seen a lot of investors who come into older neighborhoods, they buy older homes, they tear them down, they build up what people call tall skinnies in their place. They may try to flip the homes for profit. When they do that, that raises house prices in the area and it makes it less affordable for everyone else to buy. And they're doing this to make a quick profit. Or they turn the properties into revenue properties with renters. And again, because now the property makes money, the value of it goes up. And so this land speculation becomes a real issue in established neighborhoods. It adds to the cost of buying a home and it makes it less affordable for everyone else. The government can limit land speculation or take away the profit incentive. And by doing that, it would make the rest of the market more affordable and the value of homes would reflect their true value, not the fact that they're revenue generating units. So when it comes to housing speculation, the Canoe government has actually voted against bills that would put limits on the practice. In fact, they sided with land speculators and house flippers over the people of Manitoba. That makes life less affordable for you, but especially our young families. In 2 years of the Canoe government, we've seen Manitoba become the fastest growing jurisdiction for rent in Canada. We've seen grocery store prices climb higher and faster than the rest of the country. We've seen the province return to being the child poverty capital of the country. And we've seen tax changes that have put more tax burden onto working families and give breaks to the already well off. Now, those policies hurt all of us. We need economic policies that support working and middle-class families. And if those families do well, if their lives are affordable, then everybody does well. And we're just not seeing that from the Canoe government. He's made it clear that he's not fighting for you. So I wanted to give listeners an update on the Canoe government's signature environmental plan. For those who may not know, the three major areas in Manitoba that are high for CO2 or greenhouse gas emissions. Number one is transportation. We do a lot of pollution there. Second is agriculture. And finally, the third one, which I'm going to talk about today, is how we heat our buildings. So most homes or commercial buildings are heated by natural gas that comes from Alberta. It's expensive, and it's one of the major affordability challenges for Manitoba home owners. It's a major source of pollution. The Canoe government promised to make the province net zero by 2050. And the only way for that to happen is switching over our heating system for the entire province of Manitoba and get Manitobans off natural gas. Now, some homes and buildings are heated in Manitoba by electric heat, which obviously comes from hydro, but is very expensive and very inefficient. The middle ground, one solution to get Manitoba off Alberta natural gas, is to convert our homes to geothermal energy. Geothermal uses energy stored in the ground, and they run pipes with chemicals in the ground. And through the process, you can either cool off a building in the summer or heat up a building in the winter. And it is cost effective. And Manitobans, once they switch, will actually end up saving money, and it doesn't pollute our environment. It also will create jobs in Manitoba that we wouldn't have otherwise. And we're going to stop shipping huge amounts of money from Manitoba to Alberta. That money is going to stay here and can help our economy. Now, these are all really, really good things. To that end, the Canoe government promised Manitobans that they would, in 4 years, convert 5,000 homes onto geothermal. And it basically was their trademark only real environmental promise that they made that would actually start to move the needle on emissions in Manitoba. And it should be pointed out that Manitoba and Alberta are the only two provinces in the country where greenhouse gas emissions have actually gone up. So we are backsliding while the rest of the country is making progress. Now, here's the promise. Canoe promised to spend $32 million a year for the next 4 years to convert 1,250 homes a year every year for the next 4 years. So what happens? And we've talked a bit about that on the pod. Budget 2024 comes out. There's no money for geothermal conversions. No homes get converted. Then budget 2025 comes out. No money for geothermal conversions. No homes get converted. Now, contrast that with Canoe's major environmental policy to date. He borrowed $340 million to bring in a gas tax holiday for a year. And of that, 60% of the savings went to corporations, with average families saving very little, only a few dollars each week, not enough to make a real difference in anybody's life. And in fact, from an environmental point of view, it was an absolute head scratcher. It encouraged people to pollute and to drive more. And as an affordability or environmental policy, in both respects, it was a huge failure. And it was a huge fiscal failure because it cost Manitobans $340 million, which they're going to have to pay interest on for years to come. It wasn't about actually being an affordability issue. It wasn't about the environment. It was about politics. And when Canoe eventually reinstated the tax, he lowered it by 1.5 cents a liter, which now costs Manitobans $32 million a year. And I'll get back to that number in a minute. So that's money we now have to borrow each and every year to make up for the shortfall, because we have 1.5 cents off our gas and social programs are being cut. Civil servants are not being hired or their positions are being left empty so that we can come up with that $32 million a year. So we're very much going backwards on the environment and on affordability in Manitoba. And this is very much a choice Wab Canoe has made. So now that brings me to the latest development on this issue. The Canoe government just came out and made it clear that they will not fulfill this campaign promise, that they are in fact breaking it. They are no longer promising to convert 5,000 homes to geothermal in the next 2 years, because that's all the time that they have left since the promise was made. Here's the new promise. They will offer incentives for you to put geothermal into your home. But here's the catch. They first promised to pay for those 5,000 homes. So those 5,000 homeowners would have got the conversion for free. Now you have to pay for it yourself. Now you don't have to pay up front. They'll install it for you, but then it gets placed on the bill and attached to your property for years to come. And as a property owner, you will spend years paying off the installation of geothermal. That is a huge difference and a huge flip-flop, and it's unquestionably yet another broken promise. Keep in mind, Wab Canoe had no problem borrowing $340 million for a political stunt with the gas tax holiday, and now your grandchildren will be paying that interest for years on that loan. But when he brought the tax back, he permanently lowered it. And here's that number, $32 million. That's the exact same amount that it would cost to install 1,250 homes a year. So that's the choice he's making. He's borrowing $32 million a year. And instead of converting homes and making things more affordable and more environmentally sustainable, he is now causing Manitobans to pay interest on that loan forever, and no geothermal homes are actually getting converted. Keep in mind, he never promised that he was going to permanently lower the gas tax. So the promises he did make to you, he didn't keep, and he's now adding promises that he never made to begin with. So if you get that, he has literally hundreds of millions of dollars to borrow for political stunts, and he lowered the tax despite not promising to do so. That same amount that he did promise would start converting 1,250 geothermal homes a year, where you would actually see real savings and you'd actually see Manitoba get off natural gas and start addressing climate change and pollution. So the government can't say they don't have the money for it. What they don't have is the political will. What the reality of Canoe taking this unprincipled approach has been, and here's the bottom line, the rich are getting richer. Only well-off families who will subscribe to the Canoe plan will access it, right? These are the people that won't get scared off about paying off expensive geothermal conversion for years to come. If you're struggling, if you're a working family and money is tight, the last thing you're going to do is convert geothermal for some savings in the future, knowing that you're going to have higher payments month after month for years to come when you're barely making things count as it is right now. Regular people will not do that. They won't take on that debt, which means that this program will go to the very well-off Manitobans, and working families who need lower energy bills the most won't know about the program, won't subscribe to it. So it's pretty much set up to fail. And the next point, and I can't stress this enough, this program will be undersubscribed. They will not get to 5,000 homes converted in the next 2 years. They're not even going to get to 1,250 homes a year as promised. There's going to be a handful of well-off early adopters, but those will be few and far between who will actually take advantage of this. In short, this geothermal policy is set up to fail and will fail. And it's also very revealing of the priorities of the Canoe government. When it comes to progressive promises like the environment, they abandon them without embarrassment, without explanation, and with ease. But when it comes to regressive, environmentally harmful policies that tax preferences for the wealthy or subsidies for well-off citizens, there all of a sudden is no shortage of money for that and no problems going to the bank and borrowing the money for that. So once again, Manitoba, this isn't the change you voted for. thanks again for joining us for another edition of The Ledge. Absolutely love to hear from you, especially what you think about some of the issues we talked about in this week's episode. We are on all the social media channels, and if you want to reach out by email, you can reach us at mark@markvasiliumla.ca, and let's hear from you. Thanks.